According to Wikipedia, a mascot is any human, animal, or object thought to bring luck or anything used to represent a group with a common public identity. I'm your host, Leah.
I'm Phil.
And I'm Steve. Today we'll be talking about all kinds of mascots, from the lovable, the hated, to the downright weird. This is Season 5, Episode 4, Mascots.
If you have an appetite for the strange and bizarre, then pull up a chair and grab a spoon for another intriguing serving of Remnant Stew. Remnant Stew is gluten-free, organic, made from all natural free-range ingredients, and guaranteed to provide the recommended daily serving of curiosity.
Now, like I said in the teaser, Wikipedia defines a mascot as any human, animal, or object thought to bring luck, or anything used to represent a group with a common public identity, such as a school, sports team, society, military unit, or even a brand name.
Right.
Still drawing from Wikipedia, the word mascot originates from the French term mascot, but spelled M-A-S-C-O-T-T-E.
I wonder how they would pronounce it.
Very French way. I think it's mascot. I think it's pronounced the same way.
Mascot. I'm surprised there's not an E-A-U-X hidden in there somewhere.
That's Cajun. No.
Masco.
But which means, that word means lucky charm. Was used to describe anything that brought luck to a household. The first recorded instance of the word in French was in 1861 and then popularized by an 1880 French opera.
Okay.
The word entered into the English language in 1881 with the term coming to mean a specific living entity associated with a human organization as a symbol or a live logo, or basically what we think of as a mascot today.
Okay. With a lot of luck.
With a lot of luck.
Hopefully it brings you luck, yeah.
But before all of that, the term was familiar to the people of France as a slang word used by gamblers.
Nice.
Okay.
It's a derivative, and this is...
Well, that's a difference of
like
luck,
a rabbit's
isn't
foot,
it?
Maybe, or something like
I
that.
I love etymology. This is very interesting to me, and I never would have guessed this, but... The term mascot is a derivative of the word masco, meaning sorceress or witch.
Oh, I had no idea. I had no idea about that.
Before the 19th century, the word mascot was associated with inanimate objects thought to bring good luck, such as a lock of hair or a figurehead on a sailing ship. From then to the 20th century, the term mascot came to be more widely used for anything seen as good luck charm, and then from there came to its current meaning and usage that includes human caricatures and fictional characters created as logos for sports teams or corporate brands.
Right.
And just like advertising in general, mascots are all around us. Many of them have come to be ingrained in our pop culture here in America, and I'm sure it's the same around the world. And so we'll be talking about some of those popular or some most popular mascots, the most annoying mascots, and even because there's a lot of annoying ones, right?
Yes.
And even some controversial ones.
All right. Well, for more than a century, baseball was the most popular sport in the United States. Now, in the past 40 years or so, it has been passed up by football, but nevertheless, baseball is still very popular here. And not only in the United States and Canada, but throughout Latin America, as well as Japan and South Korea.
Very big in Japan.
Right. In the United States and Canada, there are 30 major league teams. Now, here in the greater cut-and-shoot area, we've been spoiled as of late, as the nearby Houston Astros are having a good decade.
Right.
Gone to the World Series 4 times, won it twice, and been their league champion 6 times in recent years. You know, there is just something about having a team in the playoffs that really unites a city, even people that have nothing else in common, but you'll see them all wearing the team jersey and very, very excited when the playoffs arrive. So, okay, here's a trivia question for you guys. Did you know what the original name of the Houston Astros was?
The Oilers.
No, that's the football team.
Shows how much I know about sports.
This one would be the Colt 45s.
They were the old good Phil. Got it. It was the Colt 45s, the pistol that won the Old West.
Which is very Texas.
Very Texas, yes.
So is Oilers, honestly.
In 1965, they changed their name to the Astros as a nod to Houston's prominent role in the space race of that era.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
The Astros' original uniforms featured shooting stars. And they played in the world's first dome stadium, the Astrodome.
Yes.
And let's just take a little side note here. Let's talk about the Astrodome just a little bit. Officially known as the Harris County Dome Stadium, the Astrodome opened on April 9th, 1965, with an exhibition game between the Astros and the New York Yankees. In fact, None other than the great Yankee Mickey Mantle hit the very first home run in the Astrodome.
I didn't know that. But the Astros
did win that game 2-1. The Astrodome was billed as the eighth wonder of the world, and it featured an eye-popping scoreboard with an animated cowboy firing pistols and roping a charging bull.
That was a good scoreboard. I think it was pretty cool.
It's a very iconic Houston landmark.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Originally, the Astrodome had a grass playing surface. However, even though the roof of the dome consists of translucent lucite panels, there was insufficient sunlight to keep the grass alive.
That's right.
So Harris County officials worked with the Monsanto Company to develop a solution. When baseball season opened the following year, in 1966, the grass had been replaced with
AstroTurf.
That's right. That's where AstroTurf came
from. Right. It wasn't part of the space program. It was actually from the Astrodome, the first artificial playing surface. And AstroTurf became really popular for about 20, 30 years in stadiums all over the country, around the world even. The players didn't really like playing on it all that much. It was kind of hard.
There was different,
it's slick, too.
It's changed quite a bit from, from that first setup, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And but it, now there, I think more going back to the natural grass. There's better ways of taking care of the grass to make sure that it grows. Now, the Astrodome served as home to the Astros and the Houston Oilers that you mentioned, Sam. Back throughout the 1990s, it was also the site of the famous Bobby Riggs and versus Billie Jean King tennis match that was billed as the Battle of the Sexes in 1973. Very famous event. The Astros built a new baseball stadium, baseball-only stadium, in the year 2000, and the Oilers moved to Tennessee, leaving the Astrodome vacant. When the Houston Texans were formed in 2002, they built a brand-new stadium next to the Dome. The Astrodome did not the Astrodome did have one final major role to play, however, in 2005. That was the year that the Hurricane Katrina decimated New Orleans, Louisiana, and thousands of refugees from that city were bused to Houston and were given shelter inside the Astrodome until further arrangements could be made.
Yep.
In 2014, the Astrodome was added to the National Register of Historic Places. It has since been designated as a state historic site by the state of Texas. However, no funding for its upkeep has accompanied these honors.
Right.
And today it kind of sits like an ugly duckling next to the Texans' new stadium. It's our hope that some enterprise will invest in revitalizing the Astrodome for future generations to enjoy. So that's just a little bit of a side bit about the Astrodome. Now let's get back to our mascots. We were talking about Major League Baseball and the Astros. Well, maybe you aren't fortunate enough to live near a major league team. Perhaps you have a minor league baseball team near you. Well, according to MILB.com, there are currently 124 minor league teams that are affiliated with a major league baseball team. But rather than take on the name of the major league affiliate, the minor league teams are free to choose their own names and mascots, and this is where the fun begins.
Right?
Now, I will say that I've been to a minor league baseball game. I want to say it was in North Carolina,
right.
And it was the Mudcats.
The Mudcats.
So it was a big catfish.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Well, now, most of these teams have fairly normal names, like the Durham Bulls, which became well-known due to the movie Bull Durham. But others have strange names and even stranger mascots. I will detail my favorite seven and then list a few others as honorable mention. So let's start with the Amarillo Sod Poodles.
Sod Poodle.
You heard that
what
right.
What in the world?
So is that like watered down? Is that like a watered down poodle?
No, a sod poodle is a, well, it's a nickname for a prairie dog.
Okay.
A prairie dog is it's a ground squirrel, and they're native to the grasslands of the Texas Panhandle. The Amarillo Sod Poodles have a large costume mascot named Ruckus the Black-Tailed Prairie Dog. According to their website, Ruckus is a tough character who loves burrowing around the stadium, making children laugh, and throwing dirt at opposing players. There's an odd note on his website that says his ancestors were companions of Lewis and Clark.
That's great.
Next, awesome. We have the Cedar Rapids Colonels. No, not the military type of colonel.
We're talking about corn kernels here.
Of course.
And this makes sense, as Cedar Rapids is located in Iowa, which is one of our great corn-producing states. And yes, the colonels do have a life-size mascot, a man dressed up as an oversized ear of corn with a giant baseball head. His name is Mr. Shuck. And here's a quote from Mr. Shuck. Being a mascot is all about being a real-life cartoon character, said Mr. Shuck. He enjoys making kids smile and throwing popcorn at the umpires. Now, Okay, now I've got this written this way because it's the opening line of one of my favorite songs ever. Out in the West Texas town of El Paso.
Yes.
Oh, Marty Robbins.
A great song with Marty Robbins. It's got all the great elements of a terrific song. You got cowboys, horses, a beautiful woman, and regret and remorse. So, you know, that's a that's terrific a song. But anyway, back to our mascots. Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, we find the El Paso Chihuahuas.
Now, those are some fierce fighters right there.
Well, yeah, your Chihuahuas. Brain would, if your huge brain stuck in such a small cranium, you'd be mad all the time, too.
They have their own living mascot, Chico Chihuahua.
Chico's
favorite hobbies are running around in circles, yipping loudly, wagging his tail, and nipping at the ankles of the opposing players. Okay, I just made that last part up. But anyway, Chico is quite a dog about town, as he is seen frequently at schools, social events, and even birthday parties for a price. All over El Paso, you can pay Chico to show up at your birthday party.
Does he just stand there and shake?
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
It's got a nervous twitch.
All right, now let's go over to the state of Florida, where we find the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp.
Oh, my gosh. Man.
Their mascot is a pink Muppet-looking creature called Scampi. According to his page on their website,
does he
Scampi's
smell like butter?
It smells like butter and garlic.
Butter and garlic right there.
Scampi's favorite food is plankton, and his favorite movie is Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Okay, Bubba I was Gump like, why? Oh. Oh, yeah.
When asked what he likes most about being a mascot for the Jumbo Shrimp, he replied, quote, "When a foul ball hits the net and not me," unquote.
Okay.
Also in the southeast part of the United States is the state of Alabama. The capital of Alabama is Montgomery, home of the Montgomery Biscuits.
Biscuits.
Yeah. Does he
biscuits.
Chuck those at people? Because I'm there.
The Biscuits are part of the Tampa Bay Rays organization. Their logo includes a smiling biscuit with Muppet-style eyes and two white-gloved hands. Now, you might think that their mascot would also be a giant biscuit, but you would be wrong. Big Mo is a tall, brownish-orange biscuit-eating aardvark.
Okay.
His antics at biscuit games were so impressive that Sports Illustrated named him Mascot of the Year in 2017.
Oh, cool.
How
the biscuit-eating
funny. That's
aardvark
so weird.
At the Montgomery Biscuits. Well, now, further up on the East Coast in the state of Delaware, we find the Wilmington Blue Rocks. The name is derived from the Blue Granite Formation, which is found along the nearby Brandywine River. Again, you might be expecting to find their mascot to be a giant blue boulder, but you would be incorrect. I love this name. Rocky Bluewinkle is a gigantic blue moose.
Of course. Why not?
Yeah, somebody in their marketing department spent too much time watching Saturday morning cartoons.
Hey. Don't
and
knock
then
it.
Perhaps the most famous minor league team, at least if you were a fan of the old MASH TV show, you remember Corporal Klinger, who was from Toledo, Ohio, and he was a big fan of the Toledo Mud Hens.
Yep.
A mud hen is a common name of a marsh bird with short wings and long legs. They're not ducks, but they make their homes near the water and they feed on aquatic plants and animals. As Toledo is located where the Maumee River flows into Lake Erie, it is a natural habitat for these birds. Muddy the Mud Hen is a shaggy, yellow chicken-looking creature. He has recently learned Irish clog dancing, which he enjoys performing on the top of the visitors' dugouts. So that's got to get kind of noisy, I would think.
Clog dancing.
So right. Like a river dance right there
right.
On the dugout.
Yeah. When you're,
all of a sudden,
you're trying to concentrate
headaches.
On the game. Oh, Mud Hen's pounding the roof of your dugout.
I love mascots.
Now, some other minor league teams with interesting names earn honorable mention on our list. They include the Albuquerque Isotopes, because I guess because of the nuclear we were talking about earlier, right? The Daytona Tortugas, kind of alliterative, isn't it?
Okay.
Here we go. The Fort Myers Mighty Muscles. This might have been one you saw in North Carolina. The Greensboro Grasshoppers.
No, but
now up in Connecticut, we have the Hartford Yard Goats. I have no idea what a yard goat is. Back in North Carolina, there are the Hickory Crawdads.
There you go.
Then out in Oregon, there are the Hillsboro Hops. Hops as in growing grain that goes into beer, I think.
Yeah, hops.
Grown out there. The hops. Up in Michigan, we have the Lansing Lugnuts. Out in California, the Modesto Nuts. Then up in Nebraska, the Omaha Storm Chasers. Back to Florida, we have the Pensacola Blue Wahoos. And then Alabama also has the Rocket City Trash Pandas. I don't know what a trash panda is, but it sounds
I've heard
mean.
This one.
Trash panda is a raccoon.
It's a raccoon.
It's a word for raccoon.
That, that makes sense.
And then, there's a couple of games that or video games that they do.
Trash pandas.
They put the minor league teams in them, and so I've seen the trash pandas.
Back here in the greater cut and shoot area, we have the Sugarland Space Cowboys. And then finally, up in Kansas, this sounds like a team I wouldn't want to mess with, the Wichita Wind Surge.
Oh,
I don't think I'd even want to share a locker room with them. You know, that would be kind of rough, a wind surge.
So not the tornadoes, but
the wind surge.
Okay. Hey, you. Yes, you there listening to this podcast. Have we told you lately just how much we appreciate you? Well, we do so much. And so can we ask for a favor?
It's an easy favor. If you would, please take just a couple of minutes to give us a review on whatever app you're listening on. It may not seem like a lot, but it really does make a difference.
Yeah, it's all about algorithms, altruisms, Pythagorean theorems, all that techie stuff. It boils down to the fact that it helps other listeners and sponsors find us. So if you enjoy Remnant Stew, it would mean a lot if you took the time to give us a review. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Right.
Well, now let's talk about high school.
Yay.
Those are some really fun days, right? And that's where I think we really come in contact with mascots a lot. For many people, a big part of the fun of high school came from participating in extracurricular activities. So whether it was in athletics, marching band, drill team, or even chess club, these endeavors all came together under the common banner of the school name and their mascot. So what was y'all's high school mascots?
What was yours, Phil?
The McCullough Highlanders.
The McCullough
Highlanders. That's
they're
right.
Like a Scottish theme.
Yeah, there was a bunch of kilts being worn.
Ah, I see. Well, where I grew up in was an area known for deer and deer hunting, but rather than being the deer or the bucks, we were the antlers.
The antlers.
And well, you did hang those up on the wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what the collection was for.
So what did your mascot look like?
He was a deer named Scrappy. But
Scrappy the deer.
Little Scrappy the deer, but they were the antlers.
Did he have a tag on it?
Right.
And the drill team were the Antlerettes, so, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
What about you?
And forever for me will be stuck in my head. It's a great day to be a Montgomery Bear.
Bears,
that's right.
It's the beginning of each of my days in high school.
So Sam and I actually went to the same high school.
Oh.
Yeah.
And
mother like son.
And so, yeah, so it was the Montgomery Bears. And here's the thing. I have always, it's something y'all don't know about me, I have always wanted to be a mascot. I think that would be the coolest job. And
they look like they have a lot of fun.
It's hot in them.
Yeah, I'm sure it's hot. And like, I wouldn't do it now because I'm way too old for it. But there was a time I was like very gymnastic and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to be our high school mascot.
Right.
But the only way you could do it is try out for cheerleading.
Yes.
Right.
There were 12 spots. And so the 13th person got to be the mascot.
Right.
So,
and I loved the secrecy behind it. We never knew who our mascots were. It was very protected. Cheer squad knew.
No,
we
knew who it was. But
yeah, interesting.
That's cool that nobody.
Well, and where my wife went to college as well. That's the same thing. We've interacted with the mascots there, but we have no idea who they are, and it's a very well guarded secret.
That's nice. But you know those costumes got to stink.
Oh yeah,
not enough washing.
Well, from USAFootball.com, we find an interesting article titled, "Who has the most unique high school mascot in each state?"
Oh, mercy.
Now, they covered 50 of them. We're just going to give you the highlights.
Right.
Some of the weirder ones.
So maybe five?
So, well, I don't know. I didn't count, but we've got several. So way up in the northeast corner of the U.S., in the beautiful state of Maine, specifically in the town of Brewster, Maine, a page on the website of local radio station Q106.5 details that in the early days of high school competition, the teams were simply known by their colors.
Okay.
Thus, you might have the Scarlet and Golds playing against the Green and Whites.
That made it easier. Okay.
But in the late 1920s, Brewster's black and orange clad football team was having a rough go. For more than 2 years, they failed to win a single game.
Oh, that's a bad time, yeah.
Well, that all changed in 1931 when the team started winning.
Mm-hmm.
Local newspapers began reporting that they had, quote, broken the curse, won them with magic, and were no longer jinxed.
Oh, I see where this is going.
So soon the connection was made between these references and their black and orange costumes. And also, you know, Halloween kind of occurs during football season.
No.
So that nobody knows exactly when it started to take hold. But by the end of the decade, the Brewster's high school team had become known as the Brewster Witches.
Oh, okay.
And they still are.
Okay, I was a little worried there. I was thinking they were going to go pumpkins.
Brewster pumpkins.
Well, but the witches, so it fits nicely with the name of the town, in Witches Brewster.
Ah, I got you.
Is that B-R-E-W?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well,
I'm also
witches,
thinking,
but
I passed many Brewster's restaurants on the way over here. And so I'm thinking ice cream now. No. B-R-U-E.
No, this is B-R-E-W-S-T-E-R.
Yeah.
Well, now to head to the upper Midwest in the town of Mount Clemens, Michigan,
right,
which is located north of Detroit on beautiful Lake St. Clair. Okay. In the late 1800s and early 1900s, Mount Clemens was noted for the abundance of therapeutic mineral baths in the area. The first bathhouse was built in 1873, and by the 1900s, the baths have become an important tourist attraction.
Okay.
So that really was kind of that era, you know, of health and everything.
Take the baths,
So noted visitors included film actors Clark Gable and Mae West, athletes Babe Ruth and Jack Dempsey, news magnate William Randolph Hearst, and the Vanderbilt family.
Well, that's pretty notable people going there for the baths,
And they really thought it had a lot of health, you know, boost your health.
Mm-hmm.
To honor the popularity of the baths, a minor league baseball team in Mount Clemens called themselves the Bathers.
Okay, the Bathers.
Then in 1924, the local high school borrowed that moniker but made one significant improvement. They wanted it to be known as a tough team. So they inserted the word battling before the
battling
name.
Bathers.
So they're the Battling Bathers.
Yeah.
This year, 2024, is the 100th anniversary of the inaugural Mount Clemens Battling Bathers. Congratulations.
Nice.
Hmm.
Now, just next door to Michigan is Wisconsin.
Okay.
And just to the south of Wisconsin city of Green Bay, we find the town called Kaukauna.
Do you think that's what?
Kaukauna. It sounds like it belongs in Hawaii.
Yes.
Rather than in the upper Midwest. But nevertheless, Kaukauna High School has an interesting story behind their mascot.
Possibly cheesy story?
Cheesy story.
Okay, just hang on in here. Back in the 1920s, it seems like that's when a lot of these mascots got their story.
Right.
Which, I mean, it is a phenomenon
ripe age of competition and starting their mascots.
That's right. The high school team was prepping for their big game against the Appleton Terrors. There you go.
Okay.
The game was played on Halloween, and Kaukauna was dressed in white jerseys and white pants. Though Appleton's players were bigger, Kaukauna's were faster. According to one sports writer for a local paper, the Kaukauna boys looked like galloping ghosts as
they
ran
the
past the Terrors.
Yeah.
This writer may have taken some inspiration from the famous professional player Red Grange, who was nicknamed the Galloping Ghost. The teams have been called the Galloping Ghosts ever since. In 1940,
they didn't get to choose. It was just thrusted upon them.
They got to choose to adopt it, I guess.
Right,
And it's officially adopted. In 1940, the tradition was enhanced when a student cloaked himself and his horse in bed sheets and thundered onto the football field to present the opening game ball to the referees. According to the school's website, this tradition continues today.
Of course.
That's cool.
Nice.
Well, from Wisconsin, let's travel to that famous Show Me State, Missouri, where we find the town of Hickman, located near Poplar Bluff. Now, if you ask people around most any high school who the most powerful person in the building is, you'll often hear the answer, the school secretary.
Absolutely, the school secretary.
These amazing women, usually women, can simultaneously answer the phone, make PA announcements, check a forehead for fever, write a hall pass, break up a fight, and give visitors a warm welcome without breaking a sweat or a fingernail.
Good.
All within turning 360 degrees.
Yeah.
That's right. They are the glue that keeps the school together. Students, teachers, and administrators all know that you definitely want to stay on the good side of the school secretary. Evidently, the students at Hickman High School knew this back in 1914. You see, Kewpie dolls were popular back then. Yeah. It was a very popular fad, and the secretary at Hickman kept a special one on her desk. One day, for reasons unknown, the secretary decided to place her Cupid doll in the middle of the basketball court during a game.
Okay. Nobody's going to question the secretary.
The doll sat there undisturbed as players from both teams dribbled and ran past, remaining unbroken throughout the game. They just left it out there on the court. As Hickman emerged victorious in that game, the Cupid doll was seen as a good luck charm. Mm. By the end of the season, the team adopted the Cupid as their name and mascot, which is interesting because isn't that like a trademarked name? So it's interesting that they were able to do that.
You know what Cupid dolls are, though, right?
Yeah, so Cupid dolls are an old-time doll, and they have a specific look, kind of like Cabbage Patch dolls. So a lot of our listeners will remember Cabbage Patch dolls. Yeah. Cupid dolls had a specific look as well.
A little smaller, but yeah.
They didn't look like Cabbage Patch dolls, but they were a specific type of doll. The Hickman Cupids are thought to be the only team in the world with that name.
I would think.
And that info came from the Hickman High School Wikipedia page. And now to that almost heaven state of West Virginia.
Another good song.
To the region of the Pocatalico River. I hope I said that right. Pocatalico.
Yeah, Pocatalico or Pocatalico.
We're probably butchering it. According to local legend, the river and a nearby community received their name from a Native American named Pocatalico. I just lost it there. Who had lived in the area. Over time, the community shortened his name to Poca, and I can see why. When the school was formed in Poca in 1922, the team chose to honor the town's namesake by depicting their mascot as a Native American on a white horse. However, that changed in 1928 when the school fielded its first football team. Sporting their new bright red uniforms, the team stormed out onto the field. This sight prompted one local reporter to exclaim, quote, "They look like a bunch of red polka dots running around on the field." And they have been known as the polka dots ever since.
Oh, the town's polka, and they're the polka dots.
Yeah, yeah, but they're polka, P-O-C-A, rather than polka like the dance.
Right.
Their mascot is an angry-looking red dot.
Wow.
Though we won't go into much detail, a few of the other odd high school mascots on the USA Football's list mentioned above do deserve honorable mention.
Yeah.
These include the Jordan High School Beet Diggers in
Utah.
We are the Beet Diggers.
The Bishop High School Battling Bishops.
Okay.
That makes sense.
South Carolina. The Tillamook High School Cheesemakers in Oregon.
Yeah. There you go. Tillamook.
Oh, I love Tillamook cheese. Yeah. Man, that's some good stuff. By the way, Tillamook, if you're looking
for a sponsor, come on over.
Don't they make ice cream?
Yeah, ice cream too.
Oh, yeah. And going back to the Bishops, I wonder, do they only, you know, make formations straight and horizontally?
Yeah. Oh, you're funny. Yeah.
Can they run diagonally?
And they bless you, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway. I lost my place now.
Fredericktown.
The Fredericktown High School Freddies.
I'd like to be on the Freddies team. That would be cool.
Do they give you steak burgers and ice cream too?
I don't know.
Oh, that would be nice. Fredericks.
Yeah.
The Stuyvesant High School Peglegs in New York.
Yeah.
So that's just a one-legged run.
Yep. The Omaha Benson High School Bunnies.
The Benson Bunnies. That doesn't sound too fierce.
Yeah,
does it?
It doesn't. Like, oh, it's the Benson Bunnies.
Oh, they're so cute. Mm-hmm. They're going to hop.
The Chinook High School Sugar Beaters.
Sugar Beaters.
And that's like sugar beet, you know, B-E-E-T, not like you're beating some sugar. The Frankfort High School Hot Dogs in Indiana.
Oh, that makes sense. Frankfurters.
The Caro High School Syrup Makers in Georgia.
Caro syrup.
That's so sweet.
And how do you say it? Fordyce?
Fordyce, yeah.
The Fordyce High School Red Bugs in Fordyce, Arkansas. So there you go. Some weird high school mascots.
Yeah, I think I'd stay away from those red bugs. I don't like that. Well, unless you've been living under a rock somewhere for the past couple of decades, you're probably aware that some team names and mascots have become controversial. In fact, just since 2020, the Washington Redskins football team has become the Washington Commanders. Baseball's Cleveland Indians are now the Cleveland Guardians. These names have been changed due to calls from some Native American groups who claim that the names were demeaning and offensive. However, other teams with similar names have not changed. We still have the Kansas City Chiefs, just won the Super Bowl this year,
Yeah.
the Atlanta Braves, and the Chicago Blackhawks. In the college ranks, we find the Florida State Seminoles. However, this name continues as a result of an agreement between Florida State University and the Seminole Tribe. An agreement and probably some cash, I'm thinking. Some other mascots are controversial for different reasons. The University of Mississippi, also known as Ole Miss, are called the Rebels. For many years, they touted a mascot named Colonel Reb, who was attired in a Confederate military uniform. Today, African-American students make up about an eighth of the student enrollment, and several years ago, many of these students took offense to Colonel Reb. Today, the Rebel name still is used, but Colonel Reb has silently disappeared. Now, while I was researching for this episode, I ran across a very interesting article written by a gentleman named Sam Greenspan. The article is titled, 11 Mind-Blowing and Often Offensive High School Mascots. Mr. Greenspan has an entire series of 11 list articles in which he provides commentary about a wide range of pop cultural interest. He's got everything from 11 observations about the first Simpsons episode, 11 11 songs ruined by the artist revealing their true meaning. He even has one titled, 11 Astonishing Facts About the Number 11. You can find his website at 11points.com. That's the number 11 followed by the word points.com. And we are grateful to Mr. Greenspan for allowing us to quote directly from his article about mascots.
Which we'll find at 11points.com.
Article
about our stuff?
That's right. Well, now we'll get to his list in just a little bit, but I especially thought his introduction was enlightening. He wrote, quote, "When I was growing up and a teacher wanted to make a point about offensive mascots, she would say, how would you feel if a team was called the Fighting Jews and the mascot was had a hook nose and a bagel? Well, we were supposed to be deeply offended, but I wasn't. I wish that someone would think that Jews were tough enough and frightening enough to name their team after us, and not just their legal defense team, but their football team." Well, his quote reminded me about a conversation I had many years ago with a young man in the Seattle area who was from the Muckleshoot tribe. I asked him what he thought about these mascots, and he replied, quote, "No one in the tribe really paid attention to them until a couple of the kids came home from college and told us that we should be offended." So anyway, back to his article of list of mind-growing and possibly offensive mascots. Now, we're not going to go through all of them, but we're going to touch on some of the more interesting ones. The first one is from the Arkansas School for the Deaf. According to Mr. Greenspan, quote, "This is quite possibly the best mascot selection in the entire history of the world. They are the Deaf Leopards."
Deaf Leopards. That's great.
And he goes on to say that Deaf Leopard, the British rock group, met with the Deaf Leopards of the Arkansas School for the Deaf during their North American tour, and it was a match made in heaven. By the way, on the side note, did you know that the football huddle was actually invented at Gallaudet University for the Deaf in Washington, D.C.?
I didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But they're the bison, so they don't really have an interesting mascot. So, speaking of bison, though, let's go on to North Dakota. There was a city called Wapperton, and the high school was called the Wapperton Wops.
Wops. Put the Wop on them.
W-O-P-S. Well, if you're not aware, Wop was a once commonly used derogatory term, slang word for Italians. Quoting from Mr. Greenspan, quote, "They held out until the 1990s before they backed off the WAPs and changed to the Huskies." It's like neither the Italians in North Dakota noticed before then or something like that. Now, up in Idaho, we find the Orofino Maniacs. This may not sound so bad until you learn that Orofino is home of the Idaho State Mental Hospital.
Oh, that's poor taste.
That is very poor taste.
Mr. Greenspan notes apparently the high school and the mental hospital are right next to each other.
Oh.
Who knows, maybe the Maniacs even have a friendly rivalry with the hospital's own sports teams. Must make for some fascinating conversations at the fence dividing the two. I can guarantee you that would certainly be the case. I taught at a mental hospital for many years.
So for the combined game, would it be that they're both teams show up in straitjackets?
The Maniacs, I'm not sure.
Goodness.
Now we go to the state of Illinois where we have the Peking Chinks. This name was changed in 1980 to the Peking Dragons. Quote, "Why a school in central Illinois is so determined to hang on to its non-existent Chinese heritage is anyone's guess. Perhaps the school board thought it would add an air of exoticism to their small town, or maybe they just really like the look of the dragons on their sport uniforms. Also in Illinois are the Freeburg High School Midgets. They aren't just sticking with the now antiquated term midget. Their logo shows they decided to go for the ticked off angry midget stereotype.
Oh my goodness.
Oh no.
Yeah, now, that's very
down here in Texas, we find the Frisco Fightin' Coons. Ooh. In 2002, the school board decided that coons was too offensive, yeah, and so they changed it to raccoons. And I appreciate they didn't realize the move was kind of an admission that, yeah, they had been sort of racist all those years.
So, but they just skipped right over Trash Panda. Right. Like they, yeah, they could have gone for Trash Pandas, but they didn't.
No, they went to the raccoon. Okay.
Now, I got to admit that I've used this phrase a lot in my life and had never really thought about the association that it brings about for many people. But there's one more down in Texas called the Robstown Cotton Pickers. There's an interesting fact. Texas leads the United States in cotton production. Another interesting fact, cotton pickers does not evoke images of the modern booming cotton industry.
Yeah, so, goodness.
People do take offensive at that term. In fact, I know of athletic coach that used that term and lost their job.
Goodness.
So, you know, that's kind of a reminder that what we might think is just passive conversation, other people might find offensive. The topic of controversial mascots will continue to surface in our national conversation as we take time to examine whether or not to continue honoring and valuing terminology and symbology that previous generations have passed down to us. And once again, we want to thank Mr. Sam Greenspan for his fine article and for sharing it with us. And again, his articles can be found at 11points.com.
And now for something completely off topic and off kilter. Brace yourself for the oddity du jour.
Here's a story from our neck of the woods, the greater cut and shoot area.
Yay.
Now, if you know anything about incarceration in Texas, why wouldn't you? You'll know that Huntsville Prison is famous for many of the things that have happened within its iron reinforced walls. Right. The longest prison siege in Texas history, the home of Old Sparky, a hilariously named electric chair.
Famous or infamous.
Like, right.
Take your pick.
Or, excuse me, and even the prison of choice for Dog the Bounty Hunter, who served 18 months in the pen. He murdered somebody, apparently. I didn't know that until I was researching this.
Yeah.
These are just a few of the accolades this prison system has enjoyed.
Accolades.
But
honorarium.
But what of the lighter-hearted history? Well, beginning in 1931, the Huntsville prison held a rodeo made up of brave inmates who wanted to try their hand at southerly fame. Bull riding, calf roping, and bronco riding were just a few of the attractions that the public could expect when attending the rodeo. That's right, the public was invited to attend just as long as they bought a ticket and plenty of refreshments. This was a fundraiser, after all, generating nearly $200,000 in profits annually by its peak in the 70s.
That doesn't surprise me, because rodeos...
Oh, they're a big thing
here. Yeah, they are big.
They're pretty huge. Yep.
Money raised from the event would go to the prison system's education, recreation, and rehabilitation fund. Inmates would begin tryouts in September for the October-long rodeo to see if they were up to the task of rustling hardened cattle or sacking greased pigs. A favorite of the female inmates, actually, was the greased pig sacking.
Okay, we're not... But no mutton busting, huh? No mutton busting.
No mutton busting.
That's where little... the cutest thing. Yeah. Where little kids are... Yeah, they grab hold of a sheep and hold on for dear life.
Right. The inmates could expect to win a few dollars if they won the event. Enough reason to cut the monotony on its own. But at the height of the rodeo, donations pushed the winnings up to a whopping $1,500.
Yeah, that'll get your attention.
Yeah, closer to $8,000 in today's money. Now, during its run, two inmates died in the rodeo arena, according to the handbook. One year, two prisoners escaped by making use of civilian clothes left by an accomplice. The handbook says that, quote, as they exited, a guard spotted them and, thinking they were sneaking in, promptly threw them out. Now, it wasn't...
Out of here, boys.
Yeah.
Oops.
Right. No free entry. It wasn't just the public and the inmates who attended either. Performances by those of George Strait, Ernest Tubb, Willie Nelson, Dolly Parton, and even Johnny Cash would make those at Folsom Prison just a little jealous at what all the Huntsville incarcerated got to be a part of.
Right.
Now, sadly, though, all good things must come to an end. And by 1986, as costs rose and attendance dwindled and facilities crumbled, the festivities were put to an end. Now, the next few decades saw many rumors that Texas would bring back the famous prison rodeo, but alas, in 2012, the rodeo arena was demolished, along with any hopes that those rumors were true.
Fake news.
Right.
But, now, I remember the rodeo, though. When I was in college, I went to college in Huntsville, the college where I went to was in Huntsville. And
yeah, Huntsville's both a college town and a prison town.
Yeah. Separate sides of the highway.
And actually, they're only about 6 blocks apart, you know, pretty close. But, it was a big deal every Saturday in October. And, I can remember when I never actually went to it, but I remember people talking about it. And you could hear the performances, you know, from several blocks away. And I remember Tammy Wynette one time, you know, that was a big deal when she was coming.
Do you wish that you had gone retroactively?
Yeah, I kind of wish I had seen one, you know, since you didn't know. And I actually was working at the prison as a teacher when they finally ended it. It was the state had this silly law about not paying for things that don't make money, you know, not keeping up with it. So they let it go. But the inmates liked it. It was a diversion and, it drew a lot of crowds. There was a movie, you might remember the famous movie, Urban Cowboy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
With John Travolta and was it Deborah Ringer? I think it's
Ringer. I don't know that.
I can't remember who it was exactly, but there was a scene in the movie that they were actually watching that at the prison rodeo there. So
no kidding.
If you watch that movie, you can see a little clip of it.
Well, and probably some of the proceeds paid for your salary.
Yeah.
Right?
I would imagine.
Goodness. Well, guys, I got my info from cron.com and Wikipedia.
Now, in reading about all these mascots and everything, it kind of brought to mind a memory that was like, it was so far down deep in there but it brought it to the surface. When I went to elementary school, when I went to first grade, I went to Dixie Elementary in Valley Station, Kentucky. And when I was in first grade, we had a contest to name our mascot and we ended up naming the Dixie, Dragons.
Right.
Okay. We decided on dragons. And that's because what it was before was a little out of date. We were the Dixie Demons. It was an elementary school mascot. The Dixie Demons. And so I guess they figured, maybe we don't do that.
That might be fitting for an elementary school.
The kid might act like that.
Maybe it was a commentary on the type of kids that went to that school.
I recently got invited to go back. One of the elementary schools I attended to opened up brand new when I was in fourth grade, and they had their 50th birthday, and they invited some people back to go for it. And they're named after a principal named Tom F. Daniels, but in 1967, we picked the mascot Mustangs. Well, the kids today thought it was because of the horse, and I had to tell them, no, it was because of the car, because 67 Mustang was a pretty hot and pretty popular car at the day.
Still so is.
You're actually named after the car.
Well, let's move on to corporate mascots.
Yay.
Sports teams aren't the only ones that have mascots. How about corporations and some of their corporate mascots? Right. An article from a website called GraphicMama.com.
That's a great website. GraphicMama.com.
Okay.
Sister to Cooking Mama.
No, well, this is Graphic Mama. Details about some of the most popular corporate mascots of the past century. Having a cartoon character as a brand mascot has bolstered the success of numerous corporations and brought ridiculously huge fame to the mascots themselves.
Right.
Perhaps the most identifiable, at least in today's world, corporate mascot is the Geico Gecko.
Right.
Love him or hate him. I think he's better than the caveman. Right. Anyway, this little lizard with a British accent first appeared in 2000 and has maintained a prominent presence throughout the past two decades. I didn't realize he went back that far.
Yeah.
But I guess he has been around that long. One particular commercial involving the little green insurance expert, which became a fan favorite, involved the gecko continuously flubbing his lines and then getting the giggles. And we can kind of identify with that, right?
Nope. It never happens here, folks. Nope.
Well, one of the oldest corporate mascots noted in this article goes all the way back to 1894.
Whoa.
It was developed by two brothers in Paris. Any guess to what I'm referring to?
I know it. I can't say it.
Michelin tires.
Good job, Phil.
Really? Yes.
Awesome, man.
Yes. Developed for the Lion Exposition by the Michelin brothers, the Michelin Man.
Yeah.
He boasted the new rubber tires that were all the rage for use on buggies.
Boom.
And so, So rubber tires predates the automobile.
Side note, I may do an oddity in the future over Michelin star and its correlation to the Michelin tire company.
It's the same family.
I was thinking about it.
Okay.
Just a little teaser there.
Well, we touched briefly on corporate mascots during the oddity du jour of our season 3, episode 10, Geographic oddities. So we won't go into much more detail here because I think we talked about like Tony the Tiger, right, yeah, and
a lot of them.
The Pringles. Yeah, the Pringles dude and the peanut. Right. Anyway, and the Jolly, let's say the Jolly Green Giant. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what about when a corporate mascot is a crushing failure? It does happen, and you're aware of them.
Yeah.
It is somehow inconceivable to us that a group of well-dressed people sitting in an expensively outfitted corporate boardroom could look at the creepy plastic king from Burger King and go, oh, yeah, we like him. That's great.
That thing was so creepy.
Yes. And actually, my aunt actually boycotted Burger King because of him. Like, and I'm like, you know.
Making a big difference.
And I like Burger King, but that thing was awesome, awful looking.
And has he been retired? Like, I don't hardly watch commercials anymore, but is he still around?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, King, they dumped him.
He made it into a few commercials where he looks like he's just huge. Like they made him bigger, but like a huge head, a bobblehead kind of thing.
Anyway, he's creepy. He's camping right out there in the Uncanny Valley.
Right.
But this is not an isolated incident as far as strange mascots.
Of course not.
They
wouldn't have made it on the show.
Jackson Blue, an afternoon DJ for Country 92.5 in Waltham, Massachusetts, felt compelled to pen an article on the station's webpage titled "The 15 Worst Brand Mascots Ever." Mr. Jackson even ranks them in descending order. So we're not going to go through all of them, but we're going to look at some of them and let's see if we agree with them because I don't agree with all of them. The Charmin Bears. Okay. Now that's cringy.
Yeah, but being a bad mascot, nah.
Terrible. I don't think it's terrible, so but cuddly. I think it's like overdone.
You don't really want to see the commercials are way.
Yeah, calling into question whether or not toilet paper needs a mascot, I get that.
And who needs to advertise toilet paper? Like, who's not using that?
I don't know.
Anyway. But and I think their tagline right now is enjoy the go.
Oh, like, that's, yeah, okay. Oh, that's a little tacky.
And that goes right along with the Charmin Bears. Okay, and I kind of like this one. Dos Equis' Most Interesting Man in the World.
I love those commercials.
But he said...
Oh, he's got memes out the crazy the list. Yeah. I mean, yeah. They're amazing.
And I kind of... Okay, so this DJ said that he's a creepy old guy hanging out with women half his age. And I'll give you that. But it does, it's kind of like a Bond-esque, you know.
He's a Bond villain.
Yeah. So I don't know. I kind of like him. He's very interesting to me. Travelocity's Roaming Gnome. Yeah. What do you think about that?
No, that one's cool. Come on.
I kind of like it too.
they don't really do anything, though. They just kind of sit there.
Okay.
Pick him up and move him around.
He wrote basically a gnome who travels, who gives travel advice without moving his lips or anything else, which, like, he's a gnome. Like, but here's the thing. So I think there was a phenomenon. This harkens back to a phenomenon that people did for a while where they would steal somebody's garden gnome and then take them on a trip and send pictures back.
Like, I knew someone that did it with an office stapler.
Yeah. So I think that's cool.
I knew it with Sir Kraken. So there you go.
Yeah.
There you
go.
I don't mind the gnome. Do y'all remember this? Arby's oven mitt.
Yes.
Yeah, just the mitts. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm...
I only know Hamburger Helper for oven mitt mascot.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't think he was an oven mitt. I think he was a helping hand, which kind of I didn't mind him. Arby's oven mitt is kind of weird. Mr. Six Flags.
Now, I remember that one.
Oh, that music.
It's like an old man dancing.
Was that not supposed to be Bob Barker?
It was a little bitty guy, though. Kind of a small
guy. Bob Barker. Oh, my gosh. Okay, this one I can get on board with. Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, a rat mascot.
Yeah,
that's right for a kid's
food,
day.
Yeah.
It's like, what'd you get for your birthday? Well, I got to go to Chuck E. Cheese. I got the bubonic plague.
Right.
So I never could. Like, even when we went to the few times we went to Chuck E. Cheese, I took my kids to Chuck E. Cheese. Like, maybe you guys enjoyed it.
See,
but
when I was growing up, it wasn't Chuck E. Cheese. That one wasn't so big. It was Showbiz.
Showbiz, yeah.
What's the best?
Well, okay.
Gaddy's over here and, you know, some of the more localized joints Incredible Mr. Pizza Boardwalk.
The other was, those have all come around. But, right. Chuck E. Cheese made a bigger boom more recently.
Chuck E. Cheese was like a
internet
chain.
I don't know about international, but definitely national.
National.
Do we know if it's a rat or a mouse?
I think it's a rat.
Yeah, I think it was a rat.
Ugh. Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah. Maybe how that made it out of the boardroom.
I remember my dad went with a couple of my nieces. And he told
but
me
we're it. Talking about it, so then it's memorable. And that's true. All you need to
know. That's true. Well, okay.
No bad publicity here. Yeah.
Oh, now here's the... No, I'm going to break you of that, because this next one had a lot of bad publicity.
It was good at first, and then...
Then it just went south.
Jared from Subway.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone goes, oh, yeah.
Do y'all remember that? Okay, so it was a guy, and honestly, he started out as just a regular guy who lost a lot of weight by eating Subway sandwiches, which I don't know how he managed to do that. But he lost a ton of weight, like I want to say over 100 pounds. Don't quote me on that. I didn't look that
up.
Maybe
even more.
But, and so the franchise hired him to be in their commercials. And then that backfired, because then he was accused and convicted
of something else.
Of something, and y'all are going to have to just look that up. We don't want to talk about that.
Tax fraud.
This one is old. No, it wasn't tax fraud. This one is old. I think it's from the 80s or 90s, and I hated it back then. The Sponge Monkeys from Quiznos.
Oh,
do y'all remember that?
I do remember them, They were bad looking.
They were very, okay, so this article says they were demonic looking creatures with mouths full of teeth. They were kind of like a cross between a rat and a
piranha?
Piranha or something. Ugh. Anyway, yeah, they were horrible.
Good idea, bad idea.
How about Flo from Progressive? That's more
modern. I kind of like her. She's funny.
I kind of like her. I think she's run her course.
Maybe too much. You know?
I think, run her course.
They've got her annoying Flo sister, you know. That.
Not a big fan of Flo sister, no.
We did a spoof. So when I worked on the church media, we did a spoof video for our Trunk or Treat, highlighting Trunk or Treat. And I dressed up one of our admins as Flo. And she, Amanda, as she looked just like her. How about Mr. Mucus from Mucinex?
Okay, I was going to mention that one. I cannot stand that. I also thought in my childish brain that the Mucus family from the Mucinex commercials was somehow related to Danny DeVito from his role in Matilda. For whatever reason, I crossed those two.
Matilda,
the little girl.
Yes.
And the family in Matilda is equally portrayed as kind of being, you know, nasty or whatever, slimy. Yeah, and so the Mucus from Mucinex. I thought that was Danny DeVito in my head.
That cartoonish.
I can see the connection.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's interesting.
I think they both wore fedoras too.
This is also the kid that thought Toys R Us store. He apparently never was brought there. Meant Toys or Us.
Toys
so basically, it was like a high end store that parents either went to a toy store and spent their money on toys, or they went there and spent their money on high end.
I had a very active imagination.
There you go.
Okay.
Hey, Leah, you skipped over one of your favorite ones up here at the top of that page, Mr. Clean.
Oh, where did I skip that? Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's that was one of my favorites,
it's
Mr. Clean.
One of
Clean.
Your favorite mascots.
I kind of had a little crush on Mr. Clean. Hey, it's a man that does chores. So, of course, the purpose of corporate mascot is to increase the visibility of the brand and boost sales, especially to boost sales.
Right.
And, you know, so we talk, you know, we know about all of this. We're talking about all of these even bad ones. Sometimes only half this goal is met. In 1997, Taco Bell introduced a new corporate mascot, which turned out to be very popular. It wasn't a cartoon character, but rather an actual tiny chihuahua. The dog was featured in print and television ads, along with the slogan, "Yo quiero Taco Bell."
Yeah.
Yep. Today, we would say
Taco Bell.
That the slogan went viral as it appeared on T-shirts and coffee mugs throughout the nation. However, by 2000, Taco Bell's sales had not increased and the ad campaign was dropped. It was rumored that the dog had died, but that's not true. It just goes to show that even with a great mascot, it might not be enough to bring in customers.
Yep.
You have to back that up. Really popular, but
you'll just say it, but it doesn't mean you're going to go.
Yeah.
Of course, like with me, when I watch ads, I don't know what they're trying to advertise about half the time.
It's perfume commercial.
If it's a really vague commercial, it's probably a we're like,
Super
is
Bowl
it a perfume
ads, especially,
commercial?
Yeah, they spend all this money, and I don't know what it is they wanted me to buy.
Yeah.
My favorite is just, we would just go, "Yo quiero taco."
Yo quiero taco.
Let's just go get some tacos. Yeah.
All right, now let's go on and talk about college. Oh, good old college. So many fond memories. There are a few of which actually involve studying, in my case. I was really not prepared for college when I got there very well. And in 1980, though, I graduated from Sam Houston State University, named for the great hero of Texas independence, General Sam Houston himself. Now, you might assume that our sports teams would be called the Generals or the Volunteers or even the Texians, as Texans were known back in his time. But no, we are the Bearcats.
Go Bearcats.
That's cats with a K, too. What is a Bearcat? Nobody really knows.
That's right.
But someone created a big orange costume character that sort of looks like a cross between a bear and a cat. His name is Sammy Bearcat.
I had no idea he had a name. I didn't know his name was Sammy.
Sammy Bearcat. Elsewhere in the Lone Star State, we have the University of Texas Longhorns, who have a live longhorn steer named Bevo as their mascot. About a dozen Bevo Wranglers keep the steer in check along the sidelines during the football season. Then, of course, there are the Fightin' Texas A&M Aggies, so named because of the school's agricultural beginnings.
Was when I moved here, I was like, because people would ask me, are you a Longhorn or are you an Aggie?
Yeah, you're one or the
other.
And
I'm like,
there's no in between.
What?
Their mascot is a collie dog named Reveille, and you would be hard-pressed to find a college that honors their mascots more than the Aggies do.
That's right.
Next to the stadium is a pet cemetery holding the remains of all the previous Reveilles, and a special scoreboard is mounted so that the dead dogs can keep up with the score of the game. And no, I am not making that up at all. As mascots go, these aren't too far out of the ordinary. But there are some colleges and universities around the country that have some extraordinarily weird mascots. A website called collegeraptor.com recently posted an article touting several of the weirdest mascots in the country. Let's begin out west in the Bay Area at the University of California, Santa Cruz. When this university began in the wild and crazy 1960s, the countercultural-centered student body selected the lowly Banana Slug as their official mascot.
Okay.
According to the school's website, ucsc.edu, the school began fielding sports teams in 1980. The administration decided that Sea Lion would be a more appropriate name and even had one painted on the basketball court, but the students would have none of it. They continued to loudly cheer for the Banana Slugs. The issue was put to a vote, and according to their website, quote, An overwhelming pro-slug vote by the students in 1986 convinced the chancellor to make the humble but adored Banana Slug UCSC's official mascot. A large yellow costume character named Sammy Slug could course along the baseline during games.
Okay. Sammy. So is that like, do they have an infestation of slug? Like, I don't know. I don't even know what a banana slug is.
Slugs are native to the Pacific Northwest and probably in Northern California as well.
Okay.
There are a lot of them there.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever seen
one.
Now let's go way down south into Cleveland, Mississippi, and we're going to find Delta State University. The institution began in 1924 as a teacher's college. Well, happy centennial of Delta State University. Blandly, their college teams are simply called the Statesmen. In fact, the women's teams are the Lady Statesmen. But their mascot is not so bland. It's a gigantic, angry-looking green okra. Fear the okra.
I think we need to define what an okra is because some people might not know.
They're going, what?
It's a long, greenish vegetable that's kind of indigenous to the southern states and southern cooking.
That's right.
Almost and it's looks like a pepper.
Yeah. Kind of, but it's not a pepper.
It's not at all.
And really it's very good fried. Slimy.
Yeah, it's slimy, but it's good fried.
So the students shout, fear the okra during games.
It's good in a lot of
one vegetable you don't want to mess with.
Yeah.
Well, now, believe it or not, the okra isn't the only vegetable mascot on our list. Let's head out to the southwest. Scottsdale, which is a suburb of Phoenix, Arizona, is the home to Scottsdale Community College. Now, this is kind of a scandalous. Back in the 1960s, it was learned that school officials were improperly using scholarship funds that were intended for Native American students to bribe athletes to attend their school. When news of this scandal was reported in 1970, the angry student body voted to change the mascot to something so completely ridiculous and laughable that it would shame the school for years to come. Thus, Artie the Artichoke was born. Artie is an absolutely non-frightening looking, smiling green blob roughly in the shape of an artichoke.
That's a strange thing for the students to do.
Yeah, it's a weird reaction. Maybe name them.
Gather behind and do it.
The Indians, the Chiefs, or something like that, in honor of the Native Americans. But no,
it's funny.
The school continues to be called the Artichokes to this day. Now, up in New England, we find the quaint town of Williamstown, Massachusetts, home to Williams College. In 1907, a campus publication containing humorous articles and poems written by students was titled The Purple Cow. It referenced an 1895 poem by Gelett Burgess, which goes as follows. I never saw a purple cow. I never hope to see one, but I can tell you anyhow, I'd rather see than be one.
I've heard that before. Right?
Well, the name Purple Cow was so popular that when Williams began organizing athletic teams, the name was a natural fit. In 2011, Reader's Digest declared Purple Cow as the most lovable college mascot.
Oh, shucks.
Now, back to the Midwest, in the Gateway City is St. Louis University, one of the nation's oldest and most prestigious Catholic universities. St. Louis University has an unusual mascot, the Billiken.
Billiken.
What is a billiken? Well, according to their website, slu.edu, a billiken was an international good luck symbol of the 1800s.
Okay.
Cultural lore in Japan, Argentina, and the United States. Well, that's pretty around the world, isn't it?
Yep.
They all tout the positive benefits of buying a billiken, or even better, having a billiken gifted to you. Now, no one actually knew what a billiken looked like until a lady from St. Louis drew a picture of one and posted it in the newspaper. St. Louis University's association with the Billiken began 2 years later when someone commented to the campus paper that the football coach, John Bender, sort of looked like a Billiken. That's pretty brave.
Oh, no.
And the team soon became known as Bender's Billikens.
Okay, so there was, okay. I guess I don't understand. So it was a...
kind of a good luck symbol, but nobody really knew what it was.
So it's like just a good luck symbol that nobody actually handled. It just was talked about.
Well,
it might have had
different variations in different locations, so it could kind of been what you wanted it to. Now, did you know there is a college mascot that was based on a real person? That person was named Frank Eaton. He lived in the from 1860 to 1958. So this guy lived a long time. And here's his story. One night on the Kansas Prairie in 1868, when Frank was just 8 years old, he witnessed his father being shot and killed by an outlaw gang.
Oh.
Frank was then raised by his neighbor, who taught him how to shoot a pistol, and he challenged him to avenge his father's death. By the time he was 25, Frank had become a United States Marshal. He was so skilled with his gun that he earned the nickname Pistol Pete.
This is so, like, Hollywood. Like, a Western.
Right. And yes, he made good on his neighbor's challenge by gunning down the gang that had murdered his father.
Wow.
Later, Frank settled down near Stillwater, Oklahoma. He started a family, and he became a blacksmith. Well, due to his crusty appearance, his fiddle playing, and his colorful stories of the Old West, Frank became quite popular with the students at Oklahoma A&M College. He was so popular that in 1923, the students adopted the legend of Pistol Pete as their mascot.
Oh, how funny.
Today, it's called Oklahoma State University, and its teams are called the Cowboys. And a special student is chosen to wear the costume of Pistol Pete, which was designed to resemble Frank Eaton. And this info came from the okstate.edu website.
How funny. Just imagine being a crusty old man with so much character.
Right.
That
the students
all loved him. I can see that his stories of the Old West. And,
that's okay. So, and that makes me think of, and I wish we would adopt something that harkens back to Dr. Red Duke from the Houston area.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
We need to cover him in a. Oh. In an
I'd be surprised if Mattress Mac doesn't make it as a mascot.
A couple of local characters. Dr. Red Duke performed one of the first heart transplant surgeries.
But he was a cowboy through and through.
Right.
And he looked like he stepped right out of an Old Western. And Mattress Mac is a man that lives today that. He's a local furniture salesman.
Right.
And
he's famously bet huge amounts of money on sports events.
Yep.
And they're tied into promotions at his furniture store.
And hugely philanthropic, which is why he's so popular.
Yep.
Well, finally, up in the Pacific Northwest, we come to Olympia, Washington, the home of the Evergreen State College. Evergreen also represented a somewhat countercultural community of students. Rather than going with the vicious traditional mascot like the Washington Huskies or the Washington State Cougars.
Did they go with a leaf?
Not quite, but okay. The Evergreen students have selected the Gooey Duck
as
their mascot.
Gooey Duck.
What is a Gooey Duck?
According
to their website, evergreen.edu, the Gooey Duck is the world's largest burrowing clam. In fact, the Puget Sound Gooey Duck weighs in at over 2 pounds on average, and it's so large it can't even fit into its own shell. So you talk about thinking outside the box. Gooey ducks actually live longer than humans. In fact, the longest ever recorded is 168 years. Now, Evergreen doesn't field any athletic teams, which is kind of a shame because I'd like to see the clam wranglers attempting to keep the gooey duck from rampaging along the sidelines during games. Now, speaking of Washington State, or the state of Washington, the Washington State University Cougars have the cleverest logo that I've ever seen. They've stylized the letters WSU to look like a cougar's head. Now, I can't describe it well enough to do it justice. You need to Google, though, and see what it looks like for yourself. It's really a very recognizable in that part of the country and very ingenious logo.
Oh, I love the design of good logos.
Yeah.
Welcome to Life on the Illinois Prairie. Your host is Wendy Fleming Dexter, and after 30 years living in small-town Illinois, she has stories to tell. Past cornfields and factories, into the heart of Amish country, there's more here than what meets the eye, far beyond what you think you know. So buckle up and stay tuned. This is Life on the Illinois Prairie.
I'm your host, Wendy Fleming Dexter. Thanks for listening to Life on the Illinois Prairie, the undercurrents of our American life. If you haven't yet, go ahead and subscribe to Life on the Illinois Prairie wherever you get your podcast. Stay tuned for more stories, interviews, and updates.
Well, in this episode, we've covered minor league baseball mascots, high school and college mascots, and corporate mascots. So what could be left?
You mean there's more?
There's more. What about our national mascot? And I'm not talking about Taylor Swift. Which, okay, boom. She is a whole phenomenon, right?
Yep.
I'm not really much into her music, but the influence that she has had on teen girls, it has been positive.
You can't help but respect her.
Yes, know? Yes. Yeah. And she has a lot of poise.
So if it's not her, who could it be?
Yeah. So not Taylor Swift, but I'm talking about Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam.
Hey.
According to History.com and NationalGeographic.org, the origins of Uncle Sam go back to the War of 1812, so even before the World Wars. The image of Uncle Sam was based on a combination of two earlier American characters, Yankee Doodle and Brother Jonathan. I've never heard of Brother Jonathan.
Never heard
before.
Of Brother Jonathan. Yeah.
Well, Yankee Doodle was a derogatory term used by the British as a slander of Americans during the Revolutionary War.
You want your Yankee Doodles?
And it's really interesting because then our side adopted it. And just, okay, yeah, that's who we are, you know, and that's why we're called Yanks in a lot of the world. But Brother Jonathan was a legendary Paul Bunyan type character.
Okay.
Paul Bunyan is an American legend. That epitomizes
kind of a
like
kind of a
yeah
guy,
lumberjack, yeah. But that epitomizes hard work and the American frontier, and he often appeared in early American newspapers. Well, the name Uncle Sam is most likely a reference to New York merchant Sam Wilson, who was known by his friends as Uncle Sam. Hmm. Wilson supplied beef and other supplies to American soldiers, so capitalism, during the War of 1812. The supplies were transported in barrels that were stamped with the letters U.S. for United States, but the soldiers began referring to them as shipments from Uncle Sam.
Oh, nice.
By the end of the war, the phrase Uncle Sam became synonymous with the United States government. Soon after the war, illustrations depicting Uncle Sam with a tall hat, long white hair, and a tailcoat began appearing in publications around the country. Not quite the iconic image that you remember yet, though.
Hmm.
In the 1870s, political cartoonist Thomas Nast.
N-A-S-T, Thomas Nast.
Yes. Popularized the image of Uncle Sam by giving him a stars and striped suit and hat.
Okay, that's kind of what we recognize today.
That's right. So it's roughly the same as we know today. Interestingly enough, NASS also created our popular image of Santa Claus as well.
Interesting.
So for Coca-Cola. And also associating the donkey with the Democratic Party and the elephant with the Republican Party.
Well, he was pretty prolific.
He was. He really was. He had a lot of...
We need an episode about him, maybe.
He had a lot of influence on our culture. In the early 1900s, an artist named James Montgomery Flagg created the most familiar image of Uncle Sam that we know today, though. Mm-hmm. In Flagg's painting, Uncle Sam is looking and pointing straight at the viewer.
I need you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. During World War I, the U.S. Army used this depiction on recruiting posters along with the slogan, "I want you for the U.S. Army." Mm-hmm. This poster was very popular and was used again during World War II. Today, Uncle Sam is widely recognized throughout the world as representing America, Americans, and the United States government.
Right. For sure.
Good items on mascots.
Phil here, reminding you to check out our Facebook and Instagram pages at Remnant Stew Podcast. Drop us an email to staycurious@remnantstew.com just to say hi or to let us know about any topics you would like to hear us cover in an upcoming episode.
Remnant Stew is a part of Rook and Raven Ventures and is created by me, Leah Lamp. Dr. Stephen Meeker researches and writes each episode that we then host together. Our audio producer is Philip Sinkfeld. The oddity du jour is brought to you by Sam Lamp.
That's me.
Theme music is by Kevin MacLeod with voiceover by Morgan Hughes. Special thanks goes out to Judy Meeker. For a complete list of sources for this episode, please see this episode's transcript, and there's a link to that in the show notes.
Well, now, before you go, please hit the follow button so you won't miss an episode. Head on over to Apple Music and leave us a review. We love reading those reviews. Share Remnant Stew with your friends, your family, your local mascot, and Pistol Pete if you happen to run into him. Until next time, remember to choose to be kind
and always stay curious.